The following program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit AbsoluteLoans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.
You're listening to The Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell. Sponsored by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Now, in the studio, local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome to The Money Hour at 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, September 27th show. I'm your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell. Thank you for taking time to talk money. I am here to help you build a strong financial blueprint 1 week and one show at a time. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, but I'm here to answer any questions or connect you with any of the guests that I have in studio today. Please call the show at 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And my lineup for studio today, Janice Hammond, owner of Sunrise Financial Services. A financial advisor is a professional who renders financial services to clients, but how do you choose the best one for you? A great conversation with Janice, and you'll definitely not want to miss her segment. Also in studio, Doug Phillips, owner of Phillips Estate Law. What is estate tax? The estate tax is tax on the right to transfer property at the time of death. Very important information that you need to know about estate tax. And again, I'll be discussing that with Doug in with my second guest and last guest in studio, Don Hines with Real Property Associates, Urban Infill and Urban Development in Washington State. That's a conversation I'm going to be having with Doug today. Great information and great guest in studio. For more information on any topic, please call into the show. Again, my phone number is 1-855-400-1150, 1-855-400-1150, or online at themoneyhour.com. If you miss any of the show, which you will not want to, but if you miss all of it, feel free to go back and listen to any of the podcast. All of the guest segments will be listed there for any information that you need. And let's go ahead and get started with the show and start out with a little money chat.
Money. Money.
Today I wanted to talk about 203K rehab loans. We don't see as many distressed properties out there as we have since the meltdown. We're seeing a little bit of them clear out, and a lot of them are just being held by the banks now anyways. But there's still opportunities out there for homes that are in condition distress and could be for many reasons. Maybe somebody lost the home in a foreclosure or some type of process to where they were not taking care of the home. And there's just a great opportunity for you to earn some money. And I like to look at properties that are in a position for a 203K rehab loan as something that you can see that the property has the basic information or the basic property condition. So there's no structural issues with the property, but it just needs a little love. So your eye might be able to see that a little bit better than the norm. And if you can, it's a great opportunity because you're most likely going to get a better deal because it's not having multiple offers. And in this arena, we know that we're still seeing, especially in our area here, seeing a lot of multiple offers to where there's multiple buyers competing for the same home. So if you find a home that's in a little bit of distress, needs a little bit of TLC, and you've got a way to purchase it and see how that home can be a better investment for you and you're the only offer, you can get a great deal on it. So I'm going to talk about the 203K Strehab Rehab Loan at the Federal Housing Administration, FHA, which is part of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, has this program specifically for this reason, to buy a home that needs a little work on it and to have a specific loan program for that. So I want to go through some of the guidelines for it. 620 minimum credit score. You do need a 3.5% down payment. Now, that 3.5%, it actually may get a little bit closer than 4%. There's a unique calculation that's used, and so it depends on the work that's getting done on the property and how they're going to calculate that. So maybe just plan on a 4% down payment. Then you're going to have closing cost and plus the improvement cost. The closing is going to take longer than a typical day closing. Your mortgage consultant should be able to close a loan within 30 days. I would schedule a 60-day closing process at the minimum. Now, you can get it done in 60 days if you, as the buyer, is doing everything that you need to be doing in a timely fashion. If you're delaying things on the loan, then that can push it closer to a 90-day process. Now, the work that's going to be completed on the home, so these are the items. You're buying a home that you really would not want in the condition that it is, but you're doing the 203K rehab loan to get the money to fix the house. You're rolling that into your actual loan. The work is not going to be completed on the house until after it closes. And then you've got 90 days with your contractor to get that work completed. One loan, maximum loan amount up to $417,000, which needs to include the rehab cost. Payments are made during that 90-day period during the loan, and it can't be worked where you can't live in the property. So it needs to be worked where you're actually the condition of the home allows you to live in that home during that time. Maximum is $35,000, including a 10% reserve. So really, the repairs cannot exceed around $32,000 because you need to have that 10% reserve setting aside and remaining, which is going to go towards the principal reduction of your mortgage once the work has been completed. Once repairs are completed, a representative from the lender is going to go out to the property to ensure it's been done correctly. And to ensure that you're getting the right work, the work that needs to be done to make it eligible for HUD financing or FHA financing, they're going to have a consultant that actually goes out to ensure the work that you're getting done on the property is the work that's needed. So ultimately, when the house is complete, it follows what the guidelines are going to be required. There is a one-time fee for this loan to cover the representative coming out to the property. There's also a additional 101.5% construction amount and any additional fees that you have around the appraisal for them going back out to the property to ensure that work's been done. Maybe you've got another $500 in addition to that. So it's going to cost you a little bit more in cost. The interest rate's going to be a little bit higher as well, but I wouldn't be as concerned about that because you can turn around and refinance out of this and get into a better rate scenario. So I would take the highest rate that has the lowest closing cost associated so that you can refinance out of that. The work has to be done by a licensed contractor or a lender-approved general contractor with a license. Proof of bond is required. And you're going to take two draws of this. So this is something you need to be cautious about when you're talking with your contractors because they're going to receive up front for the material, and then they have to wait till the work is completed where the rest of the funds are sitting in an escrow account where that's going to be paid out as the work is getting completed. So you have to find a contractor that's willing to do that. I'm not going to list the eligible versus ineligible products because there's just or work that can be completed. There's not enough time. But basically looking at structural work or items that they are probably most likely not going to go through the approval process when you have that consultant out there. So it's more of cosmetic things, countertops, cabinets, windows, new roof, upgrading your HVAC, upgrading plumbing, some health and safety hazard things, as long as it's not structural, is okay. So major construction would not be okay. Remodeling, not okay. If you're buying, we're not seeing as much in this environment right now, but right after the meltdown, there was a lot of builders that just couldn't finish homes. That would not be allowed. You can't have a home that's not in a position to be, that has not been lived in before to qualify for your 203K rehab loan. Now, again, if you're thinking of doing this because it's like a mini construction loan, which just basically means that there's a lot of complexity into it and it's a lot more than your traditional mortgage, what you need is you need to consult with your mortgage consultant. I'm here to assist you, obviously. That's my arena, as well as your host here for the Money Hour. And so I want to be accessible and available to anything that you need. Feel free to give me a call. But you want to consult and go through the process. And then the first step you're going to do is talk with the actual consultant and have them look at the property. So you're first going to talk with your mortgage consultant or myself to find out if this financing makes sense for you, and then you're going to find a property and immediately get that consultant out to it to see what that property needs to have done to make it eligible for 203K. And coming up next in the Money Hour, financial planning advice. You need to have good advice because this person's going to talk to you about how to save your money, invest your money, and make your money grow. So pretty important as you hear money, money, money. It's all about money when it comes to your financial planner. So you need to know who to pick, make sure that they're working out for your best interest. And that's why I'm excited to have Janice back in studio, regular contributor to the show and works with a lot of my listeners. Janice Hammond, owner of Sunrise Financial Services, right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
Mortgage fraud has been rampant since 2007. Many folks don't know they have legal rights. Find out if your mortgage loan has wrongdoings and fraud. Magnum Law Group will do a free audit of your loan documents. Facing foreclosure? Need to stop a foreclosure sale? Magnum Law Group can help. We have experts with valuable knowledge, and we get results. Have you decided to short sale your property instead of a foreclosure? Magnum Law Group has the experience to negotiate better and faster for you.
Hi, this is Deborah with Magnum Law Group. Please contact us at 425-454-4300. You can visit our website at www.magnumlawgroup.com or call us at 425-454-4300.
When it comes to your retirement, don't compromise. Call Sunrise. The number one mistake made when planning for retirement is to do nothing. If you are within 10 to 15 years of retirement and don't have a plan for retirement income streams, call for your complimentary consultation today or visit Sunrise online at www.sunrisefinancialservices.net.
Hi, this is Janice Hammond with Sunrise Financial Services. You can reach my office at 206-420-8520. That's 206-420-8520. 420-8520.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Well, welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, September 27th show. I bring in studio each week the best of the best experts in our local market on everything regarding your money. I'm here to help you in today's economy. And if you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, but you can always call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com to ask any questions for the guests that I have in studio today. And right now we have Janice Hammond, owner of Sunrise Financial Services. How do you choose a financial planner? They're not hard to come by, but if you want to work with the best, you need to find the few that are out there. And it's important that the important things that you need to know about how to find those good people. And that's why I have Janice here. Janice, thank you for coming back in studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you here. And I always thank you for the great care that you give to all my listeners here on the station. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, we like to help people.
And a little bit about Janice's background. If you're hearing her for the first time, again, she's owner of Sunrise Financial Services. Janice recognized the need for a more conservative approach to investing that strives to outpace inflation. And her firm caters to you the unique needs of each individual. Actually, she works with my mom and my mother-in-law. So you got to know I trust Janice's services. That's for sure. So after 10 years in the financial industry, Janice opened her doors to Sunrise Financial Services in order to help people avoid common mistakes when planning for retirement. So Janice, talking about the right people to work for you, let's just go ahead and start out with the first question I want to ask you is how do my listeners know if they're ready to even work with a financial advisor?
That's a really good question. I would say the first thing to do before looking for an advisor is to review your finances. You know, go through what investments you have, including company plans, whether or not you have a pension, and then just compile an inventory. You need to know where your money is and general balances of each account. If you don't have this information, it would be difficult for anyone to help you.
Oh, that makes so much sense, Janice, and so true. It's pretty much impossible to map out a route if you don't know where you're at. So once you've taken a snapshot of your finances, then what do you do?
Well, I highly recommend understanding what your investment preference is. And sometimes that has to do with your age. Sometimes it just has to do with your personal approach to risk tolerance. So know how many or what your threshold is really for loss, if, you know, that would be your risk tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And then interview different advisors. You do not want to work with someone who has polar opposite ideas of where and how to invest your money. And don't ever forget that it is your money. money and don't let someone put you in investments that you're not comfortable with just because they tell you that they're good.
Great point, Jana. So it's your money. You're definitely wanting an advisor to be on the same page as you in terms of the amount and the risk that you're willing to take.
Yeah. Determining risk tolerance is a must when you're designing what I like to call a purpose-driven portfolio, meaning each chunk of your money has a specific purpose inside there and a job to do. Next would be, what kind of involvement do you want to have with your advisor? Do you want someone who will take control and fill in for you as you go? Or do you really want someone that will take the time to educate you about what each of your investment's purpose is and how it works with the rest of your portfolio? Everyone is different.
You know, I think a lot of listeners may not think about that, and it makes total sense. It seems really, really important that so what we should do is be taking an inventory of our current assets, determining what we feel our approach is, whether that it's conservative or aggressive or something in between, and decide what level of interaction we want with our advisor. Is there anything else, Janice?
Well, I always recommend ask your friends and loved ones. I mean, the majority of the people that we work with at our firm were referrals that came over from mm-hmm. our current clients. So that's a really good place to start. And even if you don't go with the person that your loved ones have advised, looking into different options and different approaches will definitely give you some good ideas about what you're looking for in an advisor.
So once my listeners have asked around, they've shopped around for potential advisors, should I set up an appointment with each one of those advisors, Janice? And are there resources that they should look into before scheduling a meeting?
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of websites out there that can give you a lot of different information regarding advisors in general. The ones I always recommend, and we anytime anybody new comes into our firm, we give them instructions on how to look these up. And you can find these linked to our website, sunrisefinancialservices.net. There's the FINRA broker check, and that's at www.finra.org. The Better Business Bureau, www.bbb.org. And then the Washington State Department of Insurance at insurance.wa.gov. You can go to each site. You just type in the financial advisor's name that you're considering or business name to see the reviews, if there's any complaints. I highly recommend going to at least one of these sites, if not all of them, to make sure that you are that you know all the details to help you ask questions to the advisors you want to work with.
Yeah, that's great information and great advice, Janice. So is it important it is important to do your due diligence before making your choice? So what kind of questions in that first meeting, Janice, would you have my listeners ask their advisors?
Well, I would say one of the most common question is how do you get paid and how will this process work?
Okay.
At our office, there are two ways that advisors get paid. One is commission-based. So this is typically how the insurance side of a business pays.
Okay.
Companies will pay the advisor directly. And the other method of payment is fee-based. There's usually, this is usually done like on the security side. Some advisors charge a fee based on the amount of assets you have invested in certain types of investments. Any of these methods are fine, but you just want someone who's open and very transparent. And even though it doesn't sound like a big deal, having a process that each individual goes through when they come to your office is very important.
That's really important. As you know, Janice, I do my One Time Your Business workshop, which is all about being efficient. And, you know, the questions that are being asked by our clients are going to be the same ones over and over. Mm-hmm. So we need to have those answers before they need to ask them. So what would a reasonable fee, you talked about fee, what would a reasonable fee be for like security accounts?
So 1% advisor fee is considered pretty standard for the industry.
Okay.
But this is so important. Keep in mind that there may be other fees involved, but this fee is charged by the advisors themselves. It is possible to have an advisor that combines these two payment methods, which, like I said earlier, this is how our firm works. So some is fee-based and some might be paid by the companies that we work with. Also, if the advisor does not bring it up, be sure to ask if they charge a fee to meet with them, because oftentimes you will get a planning fee charged to you and not really realize it's going to happen. That can get costly just depending on how often you meet with them.
So, Jana, share your fee with my clients for the initial consultation with your office.
All of the meetings at our office are complimentary. We do not charge a planning fee either. We get paid by a combination of commission and fee-based methods, and we only get paid once our clients decide to do business with us. Nobody is going to get a bill that they were not expecting.
You know, that's why, Janice, I have you here. I mean, you take really good care of my listeners, which I've said a couple times already, and obviously, again, referring both my mom and mother-in-law to you says something. So it is really important, and that's an important question to ask, and I know that you're very conscious about fees and how you charge your clients. So what other important questions should my listeners be asking when they're having a meeting with their financial advisor?
Well, find out if the person you're speaking to or you're coming in to see is actually the advisor that you're going to be seeing on a regular basis. Some people are comfortable with seeing multiple different advisors at the firm. At our particular firm, I am the only advisor. So when you come in, it will be me that you are meeting with. But just make sure that it's whatever their process is that you're comfortable with it.
That's a good point. Now, you're welcomed by your team and the smell of nice cookies bacon normally.
That's right.
So, is it common for firms to have multiple advisors in handling their clients' accounts, or how does that work?
It is very common. My staff gets asked that quite a bit. Sometimes it's because there's one major advisor and then they have sub-advisors that work under them. Those are usually firms that have a large client base where it would be very hard for the primary advisor to meet with everyone every time.
Makes total sense. So it seems like it might be wise to ask if they're going to be meeting with the person that they'll be working with going forward so that they can make sure that that's someone that they actually want to work with, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, one of the major things that you have to look for when you're deciding which advisor to use is trust. If you do not feel at least an element of trust when you sit down with someone, just go find someone else. There are so many people that do what I do.
Totally agree. I say the same thing in the mortgage industry. There's a lot of me out there and a lot of us that do the same thing, but it's really finding that right person that you trust and is going to take care of you and as well that you have a good a connection with. So is there anything else that my listeners would be able to benefit from, Janice?
Definitely. A valid question to ask is, what is your overall approach to financial planning? How do you like to design a portfolio? Don't be afraid to ask probing questions like this. Remember, you are conducting an interview to make sure that they are the right fit for you and you for them.
So I would hate to get a few months or years down the road and not feel secure with my portfolio that was invested. So what does one do if they feel that way now? For an example, perhaps their portfolio is a bit more risky than what they're comfortable with. What can they do?
Well, if any of your listeners would like, they can call my office and see if they qualify for a complimentary risk assessment of their accounts. This also provides information about disclosed and hidden fees you might be paying. We are able to do a stress test, which will tell us how the world events might affect your current portfolio, which is a lot of people find very interesting.
What a great opportunity, Janice. So how should they contact you to take advantage of the complimentary reports and the stress tests and everything else that your office has to offer to my listeners?
If they are out there and they are looking for a second opinion or a first opinion, they can contact our office by phone at 206-420-8520. And during business hours, you should always get a real person that answers the phone, which I know that's rare these days, or by email at office@sunrisefinancialservices.net and also through our website, sunrisefinancialservices.net. Whichever is most convenient for you are all great ways to contact us.
And if for any reason you didn't get that, you can always go to themoneyhour.com. Just type in Janice's name in the search engine. You'll actually see all of the segments that I've had with her in studio and great information. So you've met with a few different advisors, Janice, to make sure you're choosing the right one. And there's actually a couple that you really like. You think they're both going to be a great fit for you. How do you choose which one that you work with?
Well, it really comes down to how you feel with them. Also, is their office in a location that you feel comfortable going to and meeting? Do you even like the advisor and their staff? Because you'll likely be dealing with their staff on a regular basis, so that's important. And do you see yourself getting along with the advisor for a long time in the future? Couples often, I often see people come into my firm because men feel like they want their wife to be taken care of when they are not here anymore, and they want to make sure that their wife feels comfortable with the advisor. And being a woman, sometimes women feel comfortable working with me versus somebody else.
Sure.
So I would say that it just trust, like, and overall, do they do a good job on your portfolio?
Makes total sense. And I want to talk about, you know, convenience, because I know Janice just, she really strives to hold her client's hand and to really be accessible and to help them in, you know, in the areas that they need. And if for some reason her office is not convenient, she actually comes out to my office in Bellevue. She'll go to your home if there's an issue with you being able to commute to her office. So I get, again, just Janice, I appreciate everything that you do for my personal family, for me, myself, and obviously for my listeners here at the Money Hour. It's always a pleasure to have you in studio.
Thanks, Tina.
And coming up to the next on the Money Hour, what do you need to know about estate tax? Doug Phillips, owner of Phillips Estate Law, right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
Mortgage fraud has been rampant since 2007. Many folks don't know they have legal rights. Find out if your mortgage loan has wrongdoings and fraud. Magnum Law Group will do a free audit of your loan documents. Facing foreclosure? Need to stop a foreclosure sale? Magnum Law Group can help. We have experts with valuable knowledge, and we get results. Have you decided to short sale your property instead of a foreclosure? Magnum Law Group has the experience to negotiate better and faster for you.
Hi, this is Deborah with Magnum Law Group. Please contact us at 425-454-4300. You can visit our website at www.magnumlawgroup.com or call us at 425-454-4300.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, September 27th show. Each week I share expert advice and inside knowledge on how today's events and our local economy can affect your money. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast. To talk with me or any of the guests that I have in studio today, you can call into the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And in studio right now, Doug Phillips, owner of Phillips Estate Law. Doug, excited to have you in studio and talk a little bit about estate and taxes. And thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Tina. I'm excited to be here.
A little bit about Doug. Doug is the owner of Phillips Estate Law, and he received a BA in Economics in Willamette University with honors and his Juris Doctor from UW. Before starting his own law practice in 2003, he spent 5 years in the estate planning group at Bogle and Gates in Seattle, a large international law firm. He has more than 10 years chairing the estate planning department in Isley, Best, Donzie, and Ryder at the Bellevue Law Firm, so it must be down the street from my office. And Doug's a regular speaker on estate planning and tax issues and at continuing legal education seminars and has presented estate planning seminars at local companies such as Boeing. Doug, again, it's nice to have you back in studio. And this is a really important topic, and I think a lot of times, you know, my first guest in studio, Janice, which is another regular contributor to the show in the financial planning arena, people think more about their financial planning and in the wealth team that you need to have behind you to protect you. I'm not really sure why, but I think estate planning falls in that backup plan, which I think it needs to be right up there in the front of the plan and to make sure that you're protected there. So lots of information and great advice that Doug can share with you. But today we're going to talk about estate taxes. So what is an estate tax? Can you explain that to my listeners?
Yes, the estate tax is a wealth a tax on a wealth transfer.
Okay.
So people make gifts of wealth during their lifetime, but usually at their death through a will or a beneficiary designation. And so if the transfer of wealth is to somebody who is not a spouse or a charitable organization, there is a tax on that transfer of wealth based upon the size of the transfer. However, there are, as we'll talk about in a minute, there are some amounts that you can pass tax-free. But if you pass above a certain threshold, there'll be an estate tax or a tax on the transfer of the wealth.
So, Doug, estate tax was in the news a lot in 2012. Why was that? What happened?
Well, this was at the federal level. So the federal, as we'll talk about in a minute, there's a state of Washington has its own estate tax, but we primarily think of the federal estate tax. And in 2012, there were a lot of changes that were pending and then which was really dealing with the amount of wealth that could be passed tax-free.
Okay.
So in 2012, the amount that one could pass tax-free was $5.1 million. And we all heard a lot about the cliff that was coming.
Yes, the financial fiscal cliff. And what happened with that fiscal cliff? But anyway, it's a whole other...
Well, on the estate tax side, I mean, on the income tax side, they actually raised income taxes. On the estate tax side, what they did is actually decrease taxes. But the risk, if that law had not been passed, was that they would have dramatically reduced the amount that a person can pass tax-free down to about $1.4 million from $5.1 million. So it was a pretty dramatic drop. So we had some of our wealthier clients who were hurriedly making large gifts under the regime in place in 2012 for fear that they would not have the opportunity after that. Now, of course, what did in fact happen as of the bill passed on January 2nd of 2013, is they actually raised the exclusion from 5.1 to 5.25 million and then indexed it to inflation. So it actually was kind of much ado about nothing on the estate tax side.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of that with the fiscal cliff. I can't remember how many times I was talking in studio about what was, the potential of what's coming up, but that's where we need that crystal ball. So Doug, let's talk about, since we are in Washington state, what is the difference between Washington state and federal estate tax?
So the state of Washington has an independent estate tax system. It's one of only 20 states that do.
Okay.
And the systems work for the most part the same, meaning that you can pass to your spouse, as long as your spouse is a U.S. citizen, you can pass any amount tax-free, and you can pass any amount tax-free to a charity. So it's when you pass to your children, your grandchildren, other family members that we worry about the estate tax. So that's similar between Washington state and the federal government. The first big difference between the two systems, though, is that Washington state only allows you to protect $2 million from state estate tax.
Okay,
so that's this so-called exemption or exclusion amount is now $2 million. It's actually indexed to inflation in Washington state beginning this year. So the technical exclusion this year is $2,012,000, and that will go up again with inflation every year thereafter. So the federal government now allows you this year, because it's also indexed to inflation, to shelter $5.34 million. And that, again, will rise with inflation as well. So it's a very big disparity between the two amounts that you can pass tax-free. So that's the first striking difference. The second difference is the federal estate tax rate, once you get over the exclusion amount of $5 million or so, is a flat 40%.
Okay.
The state of Washington starts much lower, but it's progressive. So the first dollar over $2 million is going to be taxed only at 10%.
Okay.
And there's about $1 million band. So you go above $3 million, you jump into the 14% bracket. Yep. You go above $4 million, you jump into the 15% bracket. And you quickly, in million-dollar bands, get up to 20% for clients who have a very high net worth of $11 million or more.
So you just want to strategically think how much what your estate taxes were, what your estate's worth, and where you want to live.
Exactly. So I've actually had a client move out of state to avoid state estate tax. The other kind of last big difference between the two systems and one that makes the Washington state estate tax not so daunting is that we have no gift tax in Washington. And what that means is lifetime gifts are not taxed.
Okay.
So if you die and own assets and pass them through your will or beneficiary designation of an IRA or life insurance policy, there will be a tax if you have more than $2 million that you're passing to family members. However, if you make a gift literally on your deathbed, of any amount, Washington state does not recognize the transfer. So there will be literally no tax on that. So we are now structuring clients' estate plans to position them to be able to make deathbed gifts should the need arise. Now, the good news is that most of us live to a ripe old age and die. We don't normally die suddenly, which means that for most people, you have some forewarning and some ability to structure your affairs for tax reduction. So one thing that we're doing is making sure that people's estate plans contemplate this possibility of a gift before death, but especially when they're older. And And then you have a problem about what happens if the person becomes incapacitated and can't make a gift, and then we know that their death is imminent. Well, if you have a really well-drafted, and by that I mean probably a new one, a new financial power of attorney that liberally authorizes gifts that comply with their overall estate plan, you can have what's called your attorney in fact make the gift for you under the power of attorney. The problem is that most financial powers of attorney don't authorize that.
Okay.
So that's one thing to look into if you have a net worth of above $2 million.
Got it. So it really just, again, it's I can't encourage enough as your host here of the Money Hour, and I called it the Money Hour because it's really regarding anything and protecting your money and to make sure that we're having as much of it that we can to enjoy life and to be able to leave back behind, you know, leave behind to our family and our children. And that's why it's so important with estate planning is it's not about procrastination. It's about figuring out where you're at right now and getting that plan set up. So, Doug, what about the estate tax exclusion?
Yeah, so this is what I was alluding to before. So this is the amount that someone can pass, an individual person can pass free of estate tax to somebody, even if they're not a spouse and not a charity.
Okay.
So let's say I'm single and I have, and in fact, in my case, I do have four children. I could pass under Washington state law up to $2 million or $2,012,000 tax-free. That's the exclusion amount or estate tax exclusion.
Okay.
Under the federal rules, I could pass up to, like I said, $5.3 million tax-free. So that's the exclusion amount. So just because I'm giving assets to children, that doesn't mean there's going to be a tax. So if I'm single and I die and I pass all my assets to my children and I'm worth $1.9 million, there will be no state or federal estate tax.
Okay.
However, if I'm worth $3 million, then there'll be no federal estate tax because I'm under the federal exclusion amount of 5.3, but I've exceeded now the Washington state exclusion of $2 million. So there's going to be a tax on that excess $1
million.
And as I said before, that would be a 10% tax rate.
Yep.
So it would be approximately a $100,000 tax bill owing to the state of Washington.
Got it. Which $100,000 is a big tax bill.
It's real money.
Yeah, it's real money. So can I pass to my husband my exclusion?
Yes, you can. And this is a new rule under the federal law, which what I mean by that is that if I die and I'm married, my wife, she can, after my death, file a federal estate tax return and claim my unused exclusion. So if I've made no major gifts during my lifetime, then I have my full $5.3 million federal exclusion still available. And this is often comes under the heading of portability. In other words, my exclusion amount is portable to my wife. It can be transferred to her, but she must claim it by filing a federal estate tax return.
Okay.
Now, this can be done no matter what my net worth is, which is a little bit strange if you think about it for a minute. But in any case, let's say my wife's and my net worth, you know, we're done well, we're worth $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if I give everything to my wife so she ends up with a full $5 million, then and we maybe have some concern that before she dies, she's going to be worth substantially more than that, and that excess might be exposed to estate tax. So at my death, she can file a federal estate tax return through this portability concept, claim my unused exclusion, and she now has about a $10.6 million exclusion that she can use going forward.
Okay. So if somebody's listening right now, one of my listeners and getting this information going, you know what, I don't have an estate tax problem. What other assets could they be missing?
Yeah, what people often don't understand is, number one, their retirement plan benefits are fully subject to federal estate tax.
Okay.
So their IRAs, 401ks.
Really?
Yeah, all of that is subject to federal estate
tax. Well, Janice is shaking her head. Yes, yeah, she knew
to
that.
Of course she did. to federal and state estate tax, they think, they just think about the income tax side of that. So yes, even your retirement plans are subject to estate tax, but so is the death benefit of your life insurance. And what a lot of people say in response, and when I tell them that, they say, well, I thought life insurance is tax-free. And I say, well, it is from income tax.
Yeah.
It is not from estate tax. So if I die with a very large life insurance policy and the payable to my children, then I may have created a taxable estate, not through maybe my earnings that I've accumulated in my house or my retirement plan. Mm-hmm. Maybe I have $2 or $3 million or more of life insurance death benefit, and that's all counted as a hard asset.
Wow.
So you total up the death benefit, your retirement plan.
So somebody's listening, $5 million seems like a lot, but really it's not if you're leaving that out of your calculation.
Yes.
Wow. So, Doug, what can my listeners do to reduce their estate tax exposure?
Well, there's a number of things. We start with basic planning for, assuming again you're married for a second.
Okay.
So a husband and wife. One of the concerns is that if, I'm just going to pick on the husband here and say he dies and gives everything to his wife, which is very common.
Uh-huh.
If he just gives everything outright to her, we know there's no estate tax there immediately because of that marital deduction I talked about. But now the wife has all the assets, right? Now we know that on the federal side, she can claim his unused exclusion and maybe, you know, and that's not a problem. But there's no such concept on, under state law. There's no portability under the Washington for the Washington state exclusion. So normally you're going to create in their wills, if they have this kind of net worth, you're going to create a, under the husband's will, a trust for his share of the assets to pass into. And his wife is the beneficiary of all those assets for the rest of her life and usually the trustee who controls it as well.
Okay.
So she really has all the functional control and financial benefit of the assets. But when she dies, because the assets did not go to her directly, they're in the trust instead. They will pass, again, if they were under the $2 million figure going into the trust, even if they've grown, they will pass out of the trust to the children at the second death free of estate tax. So that's just,
got it.
Some people call this bypass trust planning, you know, credit shelter trust planning. There's various names given to it, but the idea is just to preserve both spouses' exclusion. So that's the, that's kind of where we start. I've also mentioned this idea of, for Washington State, making lifetime gifts. Again, this is typically more of a single person who's elderly and maybe or ill, and we think their end of life is near. So we can make lifetime gifts and avoid estate tax that way. On the federal side as well, they do count lifetime gifts when you make transfers, but they don't count the first $14,000 you give every year.
Okay.
So if I'm a high net worth person, I'm worried even about federal estate tax, and I have several children, I can give each of them $14,000 a year. It's not income to them, and it doesn't even count against my $5.3 million exclusion. So I can just do that every year. And if I have a long life expect, you know, I live a long time, I can give a, pass a lot of money away tax-free. You can also do things like change the ownership of your life insurance policy. You can have your life insurance policy owned by a trust.
Yeah.
And the beneficiaries that you want to benefit from the death benefit will be beneficiaries of that trust,
sure.
like your spouse or your children. And if the if you transfer ownership of the policy within before, if either you have the trust buy the policy initially or you gift a policy to the trust that you currently own and live another 3 years past that, then the death benefit's no longer part of your taxable estate. So those are very tried and true things that we do to reduce estate taxes. And of course, there's many more, but I know
of course there is. And I
details.
Well, and you know, that's what radio really is about. It's an hour show. It's about just giving you some things to think about. And you know, it's okay if we're leaving the listeners wanting a little more because there's not enough time to go over every special circumstances. And it's really just hearing something and realizing, you know what, I need to get on the phone. I need to talk to an expert. And that's really what the show's about. 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-411-50 or online at the Money Hour. Just type in Doug's name and you will find his segments that I've had in studio with him. And he'd be happy to assist and help with any of you being a listener of the show. Doug, thank you so much for coming back into studio.
Thank
Excited
you,
to have you back in again. I got a list of questions that I want to ask you. We'll have to do that next time.
Thanks again.
Coming up next in the Money Hour, urban infill and urban development in Washington State. Don Hines with Real Property Associates right here on 1150 AM KKNW after the short break.
Mortgage fraud has been rampant since 2007. Many folks don't know they have legal rights. Find out if your mortgage loan has wrongdoings and fraud. Magnum Law Group will do a free audit of your loan documents. Facing foreclosure? Need to stop a foreclosure sale? Magnum Law Group can help. We have experts with valuable knowledge and we get results. Have you decided to short sale your property instead of a foreclosure? Magnum Law Group has the experience to negotiate better and faster for you.
Hi, this is Deborah with Magnum Law Group. Please contact us at 425-454-4300. You can visit our website at www.magnumlawgroup.com or call us at 425-454-4300.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to The Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, September 27th show. I'm dedicated to my listeners, providing you with the tools needed to make informed decisions on all matters that affect your money. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast. You can call the show at 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com to discuss anything regarding your money with myself or any of the guests that I have in studio. Last guest in studio, Don Hines with Real Property Associates. And I actually have Don on the phone here, which is a little unusual because usually I have my guest live in studio. But I'm very excited, Don, to have you here and to take time to be with me on my show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tina.
And Don is with Coldwell Banker Bain. Even though Don grew up in a small agricultural community in Southern California, he has called Seattle home since 1976. Golf has been a passion for Don since high school, including a short stint as a pro. Now fly fishing is Don's first love, with sailing coming in as a close second. Somehow, with his busy real estate practice, he finds time to collect and restore old Porsches. And longstanding interest in arts and all culture and urban life makes selling real estate the perfect career for Don. Helping his clients find the ideal home is always rewarding. Don, again, it's just a pleasure to have you here. And I have to say that this is the first time that I've had a conversation around urban infill and urban development. So I think it's going to be a great segment for my listeners. And if you're listening to the show and you don't catch the entire show, again, you can always go online to themoneyhour.com and listen to any of the individual segments I have posted, which, Don, I definitely will have yours there on the guest posting. So let's go ahead and explain to my listeners what urban infill and urban development is.
Well, that's when things get redeveloped, or some of the like the areas around Ballard and Fremont where the zoning allows to add extra units, and it increases the density, and it makes the community more vibrant.
So why is there a focus on infill development in Washington State?
Well, because we have a lack of land to build on. I mean, you have geographic restrictions, so mm-hmm. we're kind of limited to go north and south on each side of the water, the west side of the water, rather. And the areas that it's happened a lot in, and Ballard, I think, is the best example, the community has become way healthier as far as the merchants are concerned, and you know, they're just better supported because there's more people and more money.
Makes total sense. So, Don, I would assume urban infill, you feel, is good for our economy.
I believe it is, and I think it's also good for the community.
Mm-hmm. So, Don, if a listener asks you if infill damaged our community, what would you say?
I would say no.
Okay.
You know, I'd say that just the opposite. I think it helps our community, and with a higher density, people walk more. People rely less on their cars. I think it's better for the environment as well.
Well, I know a lot of people in our area, especially when you get into Seattle, walk score, or do they call walk score a walking score?
Walk score.
Walk score is really important. I live in Newcastle, so my walk score, we won't talk about that, but we have a lot of people that are with it's really important. So is infill better than sprawl?
I think it's way better.
Okay.
I think that it's better for the environment because people don't drive as much. In areas where there's a big suburban area, has a lot of people in their cars, and it also takes over natural habitats for, you know, the different animals when you keep developing and going out. So I think that, it's been part of our lives forever, but I think that the higher density and community centers are important.
Totally, totally agree. So could infill project fit into the neighborhoods better?
I think they could, but I don't think you're ever going to get people to completely agree on what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best approach is to not look at it black and white and think of it as, you know, most of it's in the gray area and what good
sure.
it does do. because it does create more affordable housing for a lot of people in the city here.
Okay. So, Don, by tearing down what is already built and redeveloping in a more intense use, do you agree that we can preserve the rural areas of Puget Sound?
Well, I think, yeah. I don't know that we'll completely do that, but I think it will help. And I think that I think the more we can stay out of our cars, the better. And I think the other thing that we could use is better public transportation.
Well, that's funny you say that because I've actually had public transportation in here a few times and state representative and you know, so there's a lot of exciting things, as you know, being in the real estate business that are coming up. It just takes time, but there's a lot of exciting things happen. So do you agree in the major urban areas of Puget Sound, commute times are longer and people are choosing to live closer to work?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are moving closer to where they work. Just because the commute's so unreliable, you never know how long it's going to take.
Yeah, and especially when we get our first little bit of sign that, or a little bit of rain that comes in that we saw at the beginning of the week. Man, traffic was terrible.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So are there any zoning issues that need to be addressed?
You know, I don't think so. You know, I think that everybody it's more of a philosophical thing where if you look at what's happening rather than saying it's good or bad, I think trying to have some acceptance around it and also look at what really is good about it, because I think there's more good than there is bad, even though it is change and we as people don't like change.
Sure. So, Don, infill, it's a challenging form of development, and it starts with trying to accumulate enough parcels of land with the right zoning to be able to allow for the economically feasible project. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
So, go ahead, Don.
I was going to say that most of the projects that get done in Seattle have to be fairly vertical because of the cost of the land.
Yes.
And the higher the density, the lower the land cost could be. So some of the downzoning that's being done actually affects the infill in a negative way, I think.
Okay. So what about financial feasibility for the developer? Do you see struggles on or getting parcel owners to all agree to sell in a similar time frame for the price that makes sense and economic sense?
Well, it's always a challenge to bring the people together, but, you know, it's a very fair market, I think, you know, where it's the supply and demand, and they do get a little bit more for their properties when they sell, when they have the right zoning and they sell to a developer than they would selling as a single family most of the time, but not always. Sometimes it's worth more as a single family if it has a really nice house on it.
Sure. So, Don, what are the best parcels for infill?
Well, all the L-zone parcels are probably the most desirable for the people doing infill for residential, but the NC zones are pretty desirable, too.
Okay.
So those are the ones that I see the most for, you know, being used as infill.
And what about historical buildings?
Well, historic preservation, I think, is a great thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of that happening in different areas around Seattle. Ballard Avenue has seen a lot of that. You know, they're in the historic district, and I know that of a couple buildings that have just gone through a major retrofit, and they're beautiful.
So, and what buildings are those?
Well, I couldn't tell you the addresses, but it's on the 5300 block of Ballard Avenue.
Okay.
They were done by Mike Peck and Brian Regan.
Oh, I know Mike Peck.
Well, he in partnership, he did it with Brian.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Don't personally know him, but I know of him. So, Don, are there other restrictions regarding parking, retail space? You talked about, you know, pipe building up because of the lack of land. So for height requirements, any other restrictions?
Well, the parking is, even though they don't have parking requirements, a lot of times in a more practical sense, we need parking, you know, or we need some kind of a reason for the people not to have cars, because, you know, a lot of the areas where they have a lot of infill, there isn't any parking. Even the parking that's provided off street doesn't really work very well.
Yeah.
So parking is definitely an issue.
So, Dawn, looking into the future, do you see that this becoming more common in the Puget Sound area? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's way more common in the Seattle area for sure, and probably in most big cities. You know, I think a lot of it's happening in San Francisco too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we seem to follow everything that the other Port Rim cities do. So why not this?
Right.
So, Dawn, and off this topic and just getting on, you know, into real estate, what's happening in your real estate career right now in this market, and how are you advising buyers or sellers?
Well, I think the market is really healthy right now, and you know, I think a lot of that's driven by the interest rates, so it's hard to tell what's going to happen, but you know, it's a seller's market still, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of multiple offers. You know, things are selling for way more than the list price quite often.
Yeah, they definitely are, and I think it's, you know, you've mentioned the supply and demand. Until we see some, either we see more supply to meet the demand of buyers, or we see interest rates increase, which is going to make that demand lower, we're going to continue to see this this a little bit of a chaotic market that we're in right now. But I'm advising my clients, and I always have, if it makes sense for you to find to buy a property, don't get discouraged that there's a property out there for you. You've just got to work at it, and you've got to continue to plug forward and find the right one that comes together for you. Well, Dawn, thank you so much for being here and sharing your information with my listeners. And again, if you want to contact Dawn, you can call into the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150, or online at themoneyhour.com. This is your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, signing off for the day. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and enjoy your week, and I'll talk to you next weekend. Thanks again for being here, talking with me on 1150 AM KKNW.
The preceding program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit AbsoluteLoans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.